All right, what tune is that?
Yours? I don't know.
Yeah, it was the last tune I heard on NPR before I got on the call. Can't remember the name of the song, and I'm not going to sing it.
It's like the joke. Who sings that song? Oh, I think it was. So not you.
Yeah. Right. Leave it that way. Right. Isn't that the aggressive way of saying it? Who sings that song? Yeah. Oh, it's Tracy Chapman. Oh yeah. Let's leave it that way.
Frank, I like how you're listening to all the stuff the cool kids are listening to. I was thinking Living Berlin or I don't know.
Yeah, the cool kids are listening to Tracy Chapman these days.
Probably more so than Living Berlin.
I didn't want to sound too hip, which is why I came out with the Tracy Chapman. Otherwise, I might have, said something like Lizzo.
There's no business like show business.
One, two, three, four steering committee members right now.
Miles has emailed. He's having trouble getting on again, so Scott's trying to help him.
All right. Feel like there's a metaphor in there somewhere. So if people have not read the meeting minutes from last time, this would be a good time to do it. They're quite short. Councilman Hines, are you kind of zoomed out? Were you on for the entire climate crisis task force call?
Hey, Frank, it's Teresa.
Hey, Teresa.
I don't know if Chris is actually on. I couldn't get in. I believe he's covering something else tonight. So unless
we were just whistling together, we were just like rapping about the similarities between Tracy Chapman and Irving Berlin.
Nice. I like it. Yeah. Sorry, you probably won't get me to do either of those things, but.
Yeah. Well, the short story is there's not many similarities.
Yeah. The list is, and now we've reached the end of the list.
So you are on here, boss. Okay.
I got all but the last, I don't know, 45 minutes. So basically all but the important part of the meeting where, people took a vote. I mean, I'm assuming that it's all, everyone voted, yes. And we will review it tonight for action tomorrow at committee, right?
I don't know how the process works there, with you all and city council. But yes, we did get to the conclusion of the last thing you probably heard was the really contentious part, and we resolved that and then ultimately voted in support of the entire suite of recommendations. So it's now moving forward out of the task force.
Yeah, I heard the part where people were irritated. Well, wait a minute, why did we wait till the very last conversation? And then, you know, Riggle said, I talked about this at the very beginning, and people kept brushing it aside. So that's the contentious one, or was there one that was even more contentious?
No, I think that's the same one, yeah.
Fortunately, E-Tech got smooth sailing.
Frank, I think I see Miles join, yeah. So I think you can get us started whenever you're ready.
Okay, so I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I make 6. All right, great. So let's get started. Welcome, steering committee members and others that may be on the phone, city staff, to month 36 of the East Central Area Plan process. The agenda is on, if you can see the screen, the agenda is up there. If you cannot see it, I will just, I'll read it off really quick. We're starting now with the welcome, and it might be good for those who aren't talking to mute when you're not. Because background noises do get picked up quite easily. So right after this, we will, from 6:10 to 6:30, do a review of the draft response from or the public response to the first draft that that staff has compiled. 6:30 to 7 will be the change, you know, the material changes of the plan from one version to the other. Then from 7 to 7:30 is the transitions. This is what a number of folks talked about at the last meeting, and Buzz, in a manner of speaking, kind of led the charge of, like, how can we kind of, like, visually see those representations of the transitions from Main streets like Colfax and Colorado Boulevard into the neighborhoods. And then the last piece of the meeting from 7:30 to 7:45 are the next steps. So the next thing that we will do is just see if there were any changes or edits to the meeting minutes from last month. And I'm going to anticipate that, well, I'll pause here, and then we'll move on to the next thing, and then somebody will figure out how to unmute themselves, and then they'll have something to say. But anybody have any changes to the meeting minutes?
Hey, Frank, while you're waiting, I just want to remind everybody that we are recording this presentation, so just keep that in mind.
Excellent.
And to the members of the public, the Q&A function is open if you have questions, and then we may have time at the end to respond to some of those questions.
All right. Any comments or edits to the meeting minutes from last month? Okay. Let's move forward then to Scott or Kurt.
Thank you, Frank, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Thank you all for spending another evening with us. Is it month 36? I thought it was 35. Anyway, thanks. Thanks again. Okay, I'll take your word for it. So we are going to talk a little bit tonight about the highlights of some of the changes we made from the first draft to the second public review draft. If you recall, we decided because of COVID-19 and we couldn't actually move forward to public hearings to go ahead and put out a second public review draft. And it's open now on our website, and it will be open through the end of the month. On the first draft of the plan, we got close to 2,500 comments, which is a lot for this kind of a plan. About 200 commenters, Almost all of them filled out our demographic survey, and it was open for several months. If you recall, we extended the deadline a couple of times on the first draft in response to requests. And we, as we've done throughout the process, we compare the participants to the actual area residents. So the chart on the left is the people who have participated just on the first draft. So this is not the total plan participants throughout the three-year process, but this is the demographics of the 200 participants who weighed in on the first draft is on the left. And then on the right is the census demographics of the East Central area. So we're making a little bit of progress throughout in terms of representation, more equitable representation. If you recall, throughout this process, we've had over-representation from Congress Park, which is still the case, but we have got a little bit of bump in City Park and Capitol Hill compared to some previous engagements in terms of geographic representation. Likewise, with race and ethnicity, again, on left is people participating in the plan, right is census demographics. We're at, you know, a little bit over 80% of the East Central area in terms of the census is white. I think it's about 86% white. And we are a little better than that in terms of percentage of non-white participants in the plan. So they're about equal. And I think we're about a percentage point higher of non-white participants compared to the East Central area overall in this last round. A little better on age. If you recall, we're having underrepresentation from younger people, particularly in the under 40 category. So about a third of our respondents in the plan were under 40, almost half of the East area residents in terms of the census are under 35. So there's still an underrepresentation of younger people in this latest round, but it is a little better than previous engagement. Also, our participants tend to skew wealthier. So about 44% of the respondents on the plan make under $75,000, and about 60% of the census demographics of the East Central area make under $60,000. So still skews towards wealthier residents in this latest round. And then here's the overall agreement breakdown. So the way that this engagement went was you could provide specific comments on, you know, wordsmithing or maps or, you know, questions about the specific language in the plan, which is where, you know, those 2,500 comments came from. But there was also an option to give us a general overall agreement on the plan. And so this is breaking that down. About 56% of the respondents said they agree or strongly agree, and 29% of the respondents said they disagree or strongly disagree, and the remaining being neutral. Okay, I'm going to pivot towards some of the changes that we've made from the first draft to the second draft. If you recall, we talked about some of these at our meeting last month. So we have some time to get a little more detailed tonight. But again, these are just highlights. We made hundreds of changes actually to the plan. I'm going to give you some highlights of the more substantive ones that were made. And the first topic is land use and built form. So we talked about this first bullet point last month, and I think it was Miles who was the one who asked this question about there's two recommendations in the plan. One is about increasing height, and another recommendation in the plan is about improving design outcomes and design quality, especially the transition between taller buildings and adjacent shorter buildings. And Miles' suggestion was to link those two together so one doesn't go forward without the other one. So we added language to coordinate those two recommendations to happen in a coordinated manner and not isolated individually. The second dot point was our discussion about missing middle housing and clarifying what that means. So missing middle housing is 2 to 4 unit, so duplexes, triplexes, and 4-unit households. So we clarified the definition of missing middle. We added photo examples of what each of those housing types look like in the plan. We listed out some additional unique East Central issues. We talked about some of those last month in terms of preserving historic buildings or historically significant buildings, stormwater management issues. And we also were clear on how this recommendation applies to single unit areas in the plan, and basically creating that incentive for historic preservation. And basically, in a single unit area, the requirement is to preserve any historically significant home if an additional unit is added. So we made those clarifications. We also put in policy language to support a neighborhood-wide rezone to allow ADUs. So in addition to support for doing this citywide change to allow ADUs, if there was support to move forward from City Council or from CPB on and wanting to do it before a citywide change is made, there's a recommendation in there to allow a neighborhood-wide recommendation for adding ADUs. The third bullet point down, we added facilitation of adaptive reuse of historic structures and preservation in large single unit structures. So this applies to higher density multi-unit areas, such as in Cap Hill. This is not single unit in Congress Park. So we have a recommendation on, and a separate recommendation for how we treat the multi-unit areas in Cap Hill. And this is intended to help preserve more of those buildings as redevelopment occurs. And then lastly, we talked a lot throughout this process about parking. In the first draft of the plan, we had a recommendation to eliminate parking requirements for adaptive reuse projects along Colfax. We've added to that section of the Colfax corridor to also look at parking requirements, not just for adaptive reuse, but for small lots. And what the recommendation says is that we should evaluate small lot barriers to redevelopment and look at parking specifically to determine if parking is providing an unreasonable redevelopment barrier, and if it is, to reduce or eliminate parking requirements for small lots. And we also put in there to coordinate any reduction in parking with our parking management program to mitigate any impacts to residential, adjacent residential street parking. And then I'll pause for a second after this next slide before I go to the next topic to if we want to discuss or ask any questions on any of these updates. But if you recall, at our last meeting, we discussed the Royal Palace Motel. So that's at Colorado and Colfax. And the committee recommended that we look at that property and increasing it even further. It was 8 stories in the first draft. And the recommendation from the committee was to increase that to 12 stories. We took that recommendation seriously. We looked at that property in detail. And while we do acknowledge that Colorado and Colfax is a unique intersection, it's the crossing of 2 planned high capacity transit routes, we think that the land use recommendation that was there accounts for that unique intersection and unique node. If you recall, right at the corner, we are recommending 12 stories, but the Royal Palace Motel is not at the corner. It's actually further north. And we think that 8 stories is a sufficient for that property. The basic reasoning is we don't see anything really unique about that site. There's no owner assemblage. It's not particularly a large site. It's not a really deep site. We've done some modeling that Chaney will show later in the agenda of that site. So for those reasons, we looked at it from a technical perspective, and we didn't think that one property warranted us giving it a unique increase in height. So with that, I will stop there before I move on to the next topic to see if there's any steering committee discussion or comment on those changes from the first draft to the second draft.
All right.
Okay. So hearing none, remember, we're still operating as we have throughout the 3-year process, that we will interpret silence as support. So we'll move on to the next topic, and that is mobility. There's been a lot of questions that have come up about some of the mobility recommendations and how they may impact traffic patterns or supply of parking. And we continually need to be aware that a plan is a guiding document. It's not answering all the detailed questions, just like it doesn't, you know, answer their specific regulatory changes. It also doesn't answer specific design changes. Evaluation of traffic is done at that next phase, in the design phase. So we actually added language to the plan that clarifies that, that says that any recommendation for mobility requires additional analysis, including traffic studies, before those improvements are installed. And that's more of a clarification edit, but we thought it was significant enough to make sure that you all everyone understands that, because it's generated a lot of questions. And just from a planning perspective, this makes sense, because this is a 20-year plan. Many of these mobility infrastructure projects won't take place in the next few years. They may take place, 10 years plus out. And obviously, traffic patterns 10 years from now are going to be different than today. And so we could do, traffic studies today, and we have done some. But for those individual projects, it really makes more sense to do traffic studies when those are being advanced to the next phase of design. So we've added some language to clarify that. There was a lot of comments in the mobility section. I think the mobility section had the most number of comments of any of the section. And many of those comments were about adding more improvements. Here's a few of those. Intersection improvements are 23rd and Gaylord. 3 intersections on 11th at Grant, Clarkson, and Washington. 3 intersections on 10th, Sherman, Downing, and Corona. And 2 intersections on Sherman at 8th and 7th. And then at Montview and Colorado. So we've added all of those to our map of mobility improvements for intersections. And we've also updated 6th and 8th to include a study of mid-block signals. That was in response to several comments. Talking about those mid-block crossings and signals. There's also the 16th Avenue was a high priority improvement through the process. But as you all know, East High School provides a barrier east-west on 16th. And so we've added a recommendation to study a connection through East High School on 16th Avenue. There was a lot of comments about there's not enough north-south improvements in the first draft. And so we added the Corona Downing couplet to our transformative street map with a transit and pedestrian emphasis. So this is actually a pretty significant change because we are adding it as a transit priority street. And this street is actually not included in the Denver Moves transit plan, which is the citywide transit plan. So this would be an addition to the Denver Moves transit plan if this recommendation is adopted. We also added as an amenity at our mobility hub. So mobility hubs are some of the key BRT stations, not every BRT station, but some of the more highly used ones, such as Colorado and Colfax and some of the other ones, to look at public restrooms as a rider amenity. And then lastly, we talked about this at our last month meeting, to add language to the plan about additional BRT stations and changes in location be included in the next phase of study and design for the BRT project. All right, I will, before I get to the next chapter, I will again stop to see if there's any questions or comments on those mobility updates by the steering committee.
Go
ahead. Was that Miles? Go ahead.
No, it was Chris Hines. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Just a comment about the 16th Avenue closure and the, because now we've closed 11th in two different spots. I would say 16th Avenue, now that it has been open to the people, we've had universally positive feedback, not a single negative feedback on 16th since it's been closed. 11th, you know, the portion that was closed at the same time as 16th, near universal positive feedback. There was one person right when it first closed who said that they didn't like the people walking their dogs and having the dogs pee on their lawn. But other than that, that has been near universal as well. I think that the area on the east side of the ECAT boundary that just closed, I think that's too soon really to tell. We've gotten, you know, a little bit of feedback, but not really a lot. And so I wonder, I just want to pose this to the committee, if it makes sense to further highlight or underscore or whatever the right word is, 16th and 11th, pedestrianizing them or keeping them permanently closed to cars, or, you know, suggesting a study to that effect. Just wanted to throw that.
Yeah, and can I just add, yeah, thanks, Councilman Hines. I was going to say it's relevant to your comment. Steering committee member Bob Hampe, who's not on tonight, I remember at least he did, and it could have been other steering committee members too, asked about like the bold plan for 16th Avenue, you know, in this East Central Area plan process. And so just to tag team on with what the councilman was just saying, does the information and that has been gathered since these temporary closures have happened add any weight to the thinking on the part of staff, you know, Kurt, with you in this process, but also with Dottie around a more bold approach to 16th Avenue?
Yeah, I think, yeah, obviously 16th Avenue has been a big priority throughout this process. And I think it's a credit to this process that that closure was implemented, because the closure was basically using the draft recommendation in the East Central plan on how to proceed with that limited access concept. So that is that we, if you ask Dottie, that they're considering the closure that's out there right now as a pilot, as sort of a pop-up pilot of the actual East Central recommendation. So the East Central recommendation recommends limiting through access to vehicles on 16th Avenue, which is exactly what that that pilot is showing. And I know they are collecting some data on that.
This is Caroline. I have some reservations about permanent closure on 11th. Among other things, access to the Botanic Gardens is a problem. And I hope it would be studied further before any permanent closure was enacted.
Thank you, Caroline. Yeah, I think that is consistent with the plan recommendation. It does look at, again, studying all those, all of these recommendations before any permanent improvements are put in. So that is consistent with the recommendation.
Kurt, does the recommendation about study go the other way too? That, you know, in light of what the councilman was just saying in terms of the overwhelming support for this, I mean, I personally can attest. I mean, like, I'm looking out at 16th Avenue right now. I live on 16th Avenue, and the number of families bicycling with their kids, I didn't realize there were this many kids living in Denver. It's just very clear now. So my question is, does the study go the other way, that there will be rigorous study on the part of the city and Dottie, et cetera, on whether or not to take away the shared streets from what has been what has already been instituted in a temporary situation?
Yeah, I think that's good feedback. We'll check the language, because it's my understanding that it's not just a study of vehicular traffic patterns, but it's also a study of pedestrian, bicycle, and crashes and injuries. So it should be looked at holistically. Obviously, I think that's what's happening. But we can make sure that that's memorialized in the plan language. We'll do a double check.
There are a couple of other areas that I have some questions about that have been recommended. Gaylord Street, closing Gaylord Street from 12th to 16th. There's no traffic light on Gaylord Street and Colfax, but there is one at Race, and Race is a much wider street, so it could accommodate a protected bike lane as well as on-street parking. And then the recommendation to take a lane of traffic out of Clarkson and Washington, some of the neighbors in that area, that are farther south outside of this of the East Central area in Alamo Placida, as well as the folks who live along Clarkson, have expressed some real reservations about that. It made more sense to move it over to Grant Street and get rid of one of the three traffic lanes on Grant Street.
Okay, yeah, that's good feedback. We can take that suggestion back to our transportation team. So, and specifically on why that corridor and why not Grant, and we'll get an answer for you, Caroline. I think the first part of the question about, you know, any kind of repurposing of either a parking lane or a traffic lane would be looking at more regional impacts to multimodal transportation, including traffic. So just to emphasize that's part of all of these recommendations before anything is installed, to look at those impacts and including community input on those impacts. But we can follow up on the specifics of your suggestion on Grant.
Thank you.
Any other comments before I move on to the next topic? Okay. The second to last topic is quality of life infrastructure. And so one of the updates we made was to the recommendation for historic parkways. So this is Park Avenue and 7th Avenue. We had some interaction and engagement with Historic Denver on making sure we're emphasizing the historic parkway design guidelines and the Park Avenue ordinance and any changes that we're recommending for pedestrian and bicycle improvements along the historic parkways. And so we made sure to add that language in to make sure that those historic features and guidelines are respected. We also recommended some process improvements on how those get interpreted and bringing in more stakeholders, such as the Denver Landmark Preservation Commission, as part of the review of some of those improvements on historic parkways. We added the City Park Esplanade as a green street. So green streets are opportunities for green infrastructure. So that's landscaping and beautification that has integrated stormwater management in them. So we've added that corridor as an opportunity for those types of improvements. We also updated the language for the idea of a new public park in the eastern portion of Congress Park, and added in some design language about mitigating impacts from the traffic along Colorado Boulevard and making sure that there's elements of an active use park and not just what we consider a passive use park. So a passive use park would be one without any kind of recreational equipment and is more more aesthetic. But the feedback we heard in the first draft was to make more of a active neighborhood park. I'll stop there quickly and before I move on to economy and housing. There wasn't a lot of substantive changes to quality of life, but I wanted to stop there before we move on to economy and housing for a steering committee feedback.
Is there a particular parcel for that new park in on the eastern edge of Congress Park?
Yeah, we've identified a good opportunity for that is there's a very large surface parking lot as part of the National Jewish Campus that has the community garden on it today. It's right next to the substation. So we have an illustrated rendering of that site that shows how that could be transformed into a public park. That's the campus parcel is really the best opportunity for acquisition of public open space, and it's right in that area that's in a what we call a recreation desert or a limited access area for a park on that eastern portion. Okay, I am going to turn it over to Scott to do the economy and housing recommendation. Scott, I think I passed you the controls, if you're ready.
Yes, I think you did. All right. Hello, everybody. So for economy and housing, we'll just run through these. So on the help for small businesses, we added that the fee waivers and deferrals intended to help small businesses should be available for both new and existing small businesses. Like before, just applied to new businesses, so we wanted to make sure everybody had access to that. And then for the technical assistance, just added language that it should be applied or available in multiple languages, not just English. So just wanted to make sure that was in there so that everybody would have access to that service. And that was it's basically it for the major changes for the business and jobs sections. And then moving on to the housing. for the recommendations for helping stabilize residents at risk of involuntary displacement. We added home rehabilitation assistance as one of the recommendations so that they could have help with the upkeep of their homes to help them stay there. And then also added more language about access to other programs to help residents stay in their homes. So under that same topic, outside programs within the city and outside the city to help folks stay in their homes. And then also relating to affordable housing and preventing involuntary displacement, working with nonprofit partners to explore a no net loss policy. So I would say if affordable housing is removed from the area, an equal amount would have to be provided in the area to make sure that we have the same net amount of affordable housing. So looking at that, we've had a lot of discussion with host and others about this, and we think it's important to explore that policy to make sure that we're not losing affordable housing in these neighborhoods. And then similarly along to one of the previous ones along affordable housing users, connecting landlords with tenant assistance and rehabilitation programs. So helping landlords help their tenants and maintain their properties better, again, to then help the tenants be able to stay in the area. Added affordable housing, affordable to very low income households, multi-generational living, aging in place residents with disabilities and residents needing supportive services. So we talked about the types of affordable housing that need to be provided. We just added additional folks that need to be considered and accounted for in the affordable housing policy. So among all the different folks that need to be considered, we just added that those I just mentioned to the list. And then for helping homeownership, again, just adding more tools for financial and technical assistance to encourage homeownership, give more people an opportunity to buy or own a home in the area. And then under the social services recommendations, just further strengthen those recommendations, including looking at alternative housing models to help people experiencing homelessness get into housing. So just looking at all the different types of housing models that could accommodate them. So those were the high level changes for economy and housing. So I'll pause there and take any questions or comments on those.
Also noticed in the chat stream, Miles is still having some issues with his phone. I saw Cheney gave him the number and the access code, so maybe we can give Miles a couple of minutes to join via phone.
Okay.
So if anyone had any questions or comments, this would be a good time to stall.
Well, I'll take this. I wasn't going to say anything, but I will take this moment to mention that the comments that Ms. Schott made about Clarkson and Washington are in line with the comments that we've heard. So just to support her comment.
And with the Scott, with the when you say something like added recommendation to connect landlords with tenant assistance, what does, like, how is, I guess, why is a landlord in need of connecting with tenant assistance? What's the intention there?
The intention is to help make the landlords aware of programs that could help tenants, I believe, so that instead of just moving to eviction or something like that when there are issues or you know rents not being paid, that the tenant or the landlords are aware of these programs that could help the tenants and can put the tenants in touch with the existing programs.
So to help with reducing evictions and increasing homelessness, and you know it's costly for a landlord to evict somebody. So if you're able to provide them with that that kind of connection, that I see, that makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, thanks, Frank. See, Jimmy has his hand up. Jimmy, did you have a? Are you trying to speak?
Oh, no, sorry about that.
Caroline has her hand up, unless that's from before.
From before.
It's from before, okay.
Okay, it looks like Miles is still having some issues, so we're going to move on. We'll have to circle back with and get his feedback on some of these at a follow-up meeting.
All right, so I think with that, we are ready to move on to the transitions. So Cheney is going to show us the model. All right, I just passed presenting privileges to Cheney. So Cheney, you should be able to share your screen, I think. There we go. All right, take it away, Cheney.
So I am gonna walk through, this is a recommendation. If you recall, we talked a lot about it last steering committee and heard particularly from Buzz, who really wanted to feel and see in more detail what the transitions look like. He wanted to hold them in his hand, but we had to tell him it wasn't a physical model. It's a virtual model, and that's this program that I use. So this is the easiest way to go about it. We do have a lot of still shots like this one that I'm starting on in the plan to explain a lot of the topics, but we understand that they are difficult topics to grasp in one still image. So I'm just offering to fly around the model for a little bit here and talk about in a little more detail what we've modeled in terms of these transitions first. So if we look kind of this way back towards Colfax, you can see National Jewish here behind. And I apologize for efficiency. We did not model the backs of the buildings. But the intent of this view is to show a couple things. It is to show how our recommendation of having these side, so this is the side of a Colfax lot. And right now, the only, there is a requirement, a minimum of 25% of this has to be built at the build to line. But that doesn't preclude a building from going 100% to the build to line. And that, let me just turn on a little box here. So basically, this is what today is in terms of the transition standards today, is that the building could come all the way to the property line. And then there are, when you're adjacent to a protected district, which this is a, I believe it's zone two unit, but there's a single family house there now that you can, you know, this is kind of the massing that those transition standards spit out today. And so we are talking about modifying those transitions to, you know, step back when you are adjacent to a single unit or two unit structure to match this setback. So you can see here, we've shown that this building is stepped back. And we also talk about, you know, compatible uses and using datum lines that are similar. And also then We also looked at the ability. Now, all of this has to be calibrated. I will say details are still to be worked out, but in concept, it's pushing back to meet the side or the front setback of contextual buildings. And there is, we think, an opportunity to also look at that second step back being pushed further towards Colfax to let in more light and air for those properties. That might include modifying the transition on Colfax. Right now, you can go up to 5 stories and then you have to go back 20 feet. And that's pretty substantial and it affects a lot of floor plates. So we think that that Colfax dimension could be shortened, for example, what you're seeing now, to about 10 feet. And then that allows the back end of the building that's closer to the single family and two family units to be pushed further towards Colfax. And that will allow more light and air into those properties. So those are the gist of the kind of transition, like sensitive transition requirements and modifying those standards as they exist now from this to something more like this.
Hey, Cheney.
Sorry?
This is Jess Clark. I was just curious. I just wanted clarification. Were you saying that you were changing the entire setback by 10 feet, or is that the step back setback that you're talking about?
So both. We think that there needs to be more careful consideration in the setback on the side streets to match their neighbors better.
Yep. And then on the Colfax side, though.
Sorry?
On the Colfax side, so that's the side street. I gathered that. That was moving back to the front. Yeah, yeah, the Colfax side, were you proposing to move the step back?
Yes.
That's what you were talking about.
The step back. Right now, it's after 5 stories now. So it only really applies to MS8, the Colfax transition. But where that is applicable on MS8 or 8-story zone properties, the thinking is that could be pushed closer to Colfax to give some more breathing room on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the step back, but we have also talked about modifications to allow for greater streetscape activation. So maybe modifying setbacks as well, or just being more lenient about the build to when you are activating the street with cafe seating and things like that. It doesn't just have to be a building form, but perhaps it could be a little more lenient there. That was another Buzz comment from looking at his own property.
Miles asked what street this is. I think this is Harrison, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Cheney, did we implement the extra, we wanted 20 feet from the curb to the, on the first floor to provide for a greater sidewalk. Does this incorporate?
So,
you're saying like amenity zone, Buzz?
Pardon?
You're saying like the amenity zone?
I don't know what you mean by that. I'm just talking about from the curb to the
Front of the building.
To the front of the building, regardless of where the property line is, it should be 20 feet so that there's enough room for people to walk and for us to have a nice amenity zone. Yeah.
Not be precluded, Buzz. But that is a major problem, a major barrier that we've heard from other property owners and developers is that in the narrow lots, if you require a setback of 20 feet or require that 20 feet between curb and building face, it can make those narrower lots a lot less developable. So we just want to be careful there. We don't want to preclude you from having that 20 feet, but in some cases it may need to be closer to the street.
Yeah, well, I wasn't talking about anything less than the 8 ones. The smaller lots, that wouldn't make any sense to do that. But I'm thinking more towards downtown, closer to downtown, close but to the Capitol. The sidewalks are so narrow there that it's very hard to navigate. And I think it's hurting the viability of the street. And I don't know, if somebody's sitting on the sidewalk or sleeping on the sidewalk, it's tough to negotiate with such a, when you've just got 6 or 7 feet. And also the 20 feet allows you to have more outdoor seating. But I guess what I agree with you that there's got to be, I think there should be the flexibility. I don't know what the code is. That you have to build at the property line, but I'm asking you if we can have the flexibility of building back 20 feet from the curb, and so that the upper floors would cantilever over the retail. Over.
Yeah. So that's what you're saying should be consistent with current public works requirements. I believe that they want 20 feet between curb and building face. Now, closer to the Capitol, we do have a lot of older historic buildings that we hope do not move. But when new development comes in, yes, that would be able to be applied. I think that there's also a some sort of rule for Colfax being a reuse-heavy corridor that they sometimes can reduce that to 16 feet, which is still best practices for a main street sidewalk. So I just want to, one other view that we had, so this is a view in the plan, and this is Colfax in Colorado, so we're looking north. And this here is the Royal Palace site that Kurt spoke to earlier. And so I just quickly made one of those boxes for that as well to show what 12 stories would look like. Now, again, the comment I just will move forward with what Kurt had mentioned. This is, you know, a pretty narrow lot. I think it's 100 feet or so deep. So it's even more narrow than a lot of our Colfax lots. So just showing what that box would look like. But this is the recommendation to move forward with 8 max there. And this shows, you know, 12 stories on the corner, stepping down. So we can move around. But those are the big things, I think. Buzz, you were the one that wanted to fly around the model. So if you have anything else, just let me know.
I'll just comment. This is Jess again. I'll just comment, Chaney. This is really helpful to see this stuff. So thank you to the team for presenting that.
Chaney, were you going to show any other models, or just this one?
Well, I did have the. So this is Argonaut here. Miles, to answer your question, yes, we did look at shadows. I can't turn on shadows or my computer will blow up. This model is so big at this point, and it takes about 20 minutes for them to show up. So yes, we did look at shadows, but I can't turn them on right now to be effective. So this was the view that we used. This is showing an incentive. So this is the police station site at Washington and Colfax. So here's Argonaut. This is, the Grateful Dead Bar, whatever. Yes. So showing an adaptive reuse concept for that building with adding in some office perhaps behind. You can see some townhouses over here, but the big idea here is that that this would be an incentive property, and it's zoned MS8 now, so it would be able to go to 12. And so this is what 12 stories looks and feels like from Colfax. I did go to another, like here, if you grab your beer and walk out of Argonaut. So this is kind of what it feels like. And this would have, that has that same kind of looking at the transition standards of both stepping back on Colfax after a certain height. And this isn't a protected district in particular. It's more lenient, I would say, but it's also a more urban context, and this is to be expected. So again, following best practices here. But
I think all these setbacks really help the architectural look of the total structure, because it articulates at different points, and it just a much better look, more acceptable than just going up straight 8 stories, 5 stories, whatever. I like the looks of this. Because
also showed, I just wanted to point out the some open space, because it is a city owned parcel, and I believe this made it in the plan, but I'm speaking like we studied this. Scott, you might have to truth this, but we did kind of prioritize some open space because it is a city owned property on that lot, the police station. Doesn't have to be in this exact location. We're just considering that an opportunity.
Yeah, that's still in the plan.
There are several neighbors who have said that that would be a great spot for a dog park. There's currently no dog park in District 10 at all.
Like Jesse, Cheney, I just want to tell you how helpful this is, and I think it makes people feel a lot more comfortable when they see this, as opposed to just hearing that there's going to be 8 and 12 story buildings. I think this really, really, really helps. Thank you for doing it.
You're welcome. No problem.
Okay. If there's no other feedback on the models, I will continue with our next item.
Hey, Chris, so, before we move on to that, Miles, try speaking now. I just unmuted you, so maybe that could help, or maybe not.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Yep. Can you hear me? Miles.
I was muted on the computer, but not on the phone.
Okay.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You have to unmute yourself on the computer.
Are they connected? Anyways, whatever.
Yeah, we can talk about it later.
So,
okay. Yeah. We can hear you, so just don't do anything. Just talk.
Miles, do you want to? We have some time. We're a little ahead of ourselves on the agenda. So if there's something you wanted to catch up on from a previous slide, please do.
From the first slide, you talked about you were going to change some of the wording about the missing middle. You were going to clarify it. Are we going to cover that?
So do you want to see the actual language? I mean, the actual clarified language is on the project website. You can look at it right now. It's in the second draft. So if you have some wordsmithing the best place to do it is either do it in the document online. That's the best way for us to track those changes. Or if you can't do that, you can email us any suggested wording that is unclear or should be changed with that. But for the purposes of the committee meeting, I don't think we have the time to wordsmith all of these recommendations.
Okay, because I quickly looked at the plan and it looked like the section describing missing middle stayed the same. So I was just wondering if we were going to cover those changes. So I guess I'll have to comment later.
Yeah, I would look at it again, and we could follow up with you afterwards, but we changed it quite a bit. It's much different from draft one to draft two in terms of clarifying what the recommendation is, clarifying what Mrs. Middle is defined as, and adding in, again, some of those unique characteristics that weren't in the first draft.
Okay.
As long as you got this up, I'd like to get some clarification what happened to the exemption for parking on the small lots. It's the bottom bullet.
Yeah, so that's also added in there, and Buzz, we can help you find the specific language if you're having trouble, but it's in the Colfax section. And what we've said is that we should evaluate our parking requirements for all small lots. And if it's shown that there's an unreasonable redevelopment barrier due to those parking requirements, that we should eliminate or reduce them, and then coordinate any, if there is a reduction or elimination of parking requirements on small lots, you should coordinate those reductions with our street parking management program to help mitigate any spillover impacts on neighborhoods.
Whatever. I mean, it's very ambiguous. Small lot now is defined as, is it 9,200 square feet or less? Is that correct?
6250 is the small lot exemption. This is not just applying to 6250 lots. This is applying to any lot that's zoned MS3, which is basically all the small lots along Colfax.
Yeah, but I thought I heard Cheney increase the small lot size up to about 9,000 square feet. Is that not correct?
We don't have a specific, we don't say in the current recommendation that parking reduction should only apply to specifically sized property like a 9,000 square foot or less. That's not in the recommendation. It's broader than that.
It's just tough to know what a small lot is. I thought that we got that defined, and what I think I'm hearing you say is that it's not defined.
Well, again, there's a current exemption in the code now for small lots of 6250, so there's nothing to be done there. There's no parking requirements for those small lots. What we're saying is that the MS3 zone lots along Colfax, which are the ones that are smaller and narrower and harder to develop, we should be looking at parking reductions or elimination of parking on MS3 zone lots.
Okay, I agree with that.
Okay, I'm going to move forward to the next steps.
And just a reminder, I know that I've got somebody mowing the lawn in the background here, so if we're not talking, it's best to mute your phone. Miles, in your case, your phone, but with other people, it might be your computer, and then unmute when you want to talk. Thanks.
So as I mentioned previously, we have a second public review draft that's open to the end of the month, until July 1st. We will continue to do outreach to those underrepresented demographics that I presented at the first part of the meeting. We are looking at partnering with some of the resources in the city that's doing outreach on COVID-19, and we're doing sort of joint information on COVID-19 resources, as well as how to participate in the East Central Plan, whether that's, if you have a computer or without a computer, you can call us and we can provide you information. We are looking to hold our final steering committee meeting on August 20th. So we wanted to check with everyone here tonight to make sure that that's that August 20th is not a meeting that one of you cannot participate in if you have prior commitments, because if so, we will look at trying to move that. We're really trying to make sure that everyone can attend the final meeting, because the final meeting will be asking you to make a formal recommendation on the plan. So I can stop here for a second if anyone knows that they have a conflict on August 20th or needs to kind of check their calendar. I'll pause there for a second.
So that's the third Thursday. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I think so.
I'm fine.
Okay.
This is Jesse. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, this will sound funny. That's my anniversary, so I need to check to see if I have any plans that evening.
It's also my birthday. I'm 20th. We might have a family dinner, but I'll make it work. It's my only 44th birthday, so it's nothing special.
So I need to, I mean, obviously things are a little different. It's not like, but anyway, I will double check with my wife to see if we're going to do something that evening or the night after.
Kurt, it might be.
Okay, well,
those are, birthday and anniversary, family thing. Can we maybe have a just like the Wednesday? Like, can we just, since it's 2 months away, can we just ask everybody if the Wednesday?
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into picking the date tonight. I think if we try to do that earlier in the process and it was a train wreck. So I think what we'll do is we'll follow up with a doodle poll and see if we can find a date that works best. But we're targeting that later half of August to have our final meeting. So we'll follow up with a doodle poll and hopefully we can find a date that works for everyone.
Well, and if Jimmy can make it happen and it's not a big deal, then I would say we don't have to really worry about it all. So why don't we see if we can just leave it where it is for now, tentatively.
Okay, let me run it by the wife. Okay.
I think we mentioned this at our previous couple of meetings, to make sure that you are thoroughly, comfortable with the draft. And if you have any suggested changes or questions, to make sure that you are communicating with either Scott or myself prior to that August meeting date, because we don't want to use that meeting date to have a bunch of new information and changes and prolong the process unnecessarily. So if each of you can commit to making sure that you, again, are comfortable with the draft or at least communicating with us on any changes, then that will help us conclude this process in a smoother fashion. So that is our meeting tonight. We do have a few questions in the Q&A box. And I'll actually, so it's like John H. has asked, how will this be used if there are not public meetings? John, you can, I'm not 100% sure that I'm going to answer your question, but so moving forward, the public meetings that are left in the process, again, we've been at this for about 3 years, our planning board and city council. Both of those will be public hearings. City council will have virtual participation as well as in-person participation, and planning board will have virtual participation. And there'll be opportunity to provide public feedback. You also asked who are the underrepresented groups. I covered that earlier in the presentation. This presentation will be posted on the project website. You can look at that, but essentially underrepresented groups, how we define those is the mismatch between planned participants and the East Central census demographics. And the biggest gap in demographic participation has been younger, lower income renters in Cap Hill and North Cap Hill. So you can take a look at that, and you can follow up with any other questions. We'll be happy to answer those. Any final comments or questions from the steering committee?
Yeah, I wanted to ask about city council. I'm a little fuzzy on exactly how this, I can understand how this goes to planning board, but when it goes to city council, will they be voting on the entire draft as it is presented, or will they be voting on it piece by piece?
No, it'll be one ordinance that will be adopting the plan in its entirety.
What if they don't like a certain part of it?
Well, hopefully we'll know if there is not a consensus on the plan ahead of time. You know, this will go through, you know, we'll brief all the council members. We will go to LUDI, which is the subcommittee of City Council, so the Land Use and Transportation Infrastructure Committee. And that committee of City Council can provide feedback on it. So hopefully we'll know going into the planning, or sorry, the city council hearing, if there's any concerns with the document, we can proactively address those. It is possible for the city council to make changes to the document on the floor of city council. It's rare, but it is possible.
Okay.
Kurt, as a follow-up to, you know, what Buzz was just asking, let's just say, you know, in planning board or LUDI, something like that, there's some flag that's brought to your attention that might jeopardize the passage of it. Would then there be another reconvening of a steering committee to go over that, whatever that issue might be? Let me ask you, how would that be resolved?
Yeah, that's a good question. We typically would not take it back to the steering committee. What we would do is we would, if there was a difference between what the steering committee had recommended and what we're hearing from, let's say, planning board, what we would do at city council is we would say, here's the recommended draft from the steering committee, and here's how the planning board changed that recommendation and how it's different. So we would still bring forward both, we would record both recommendations for city council to consider if that happened. All right. Well, thank you all very much.
Kurt, I'm sorry, I see John H. asks, does Ludi vote on it? And I think the answer is Ludi votes on it to pass it off or up to City Council, correct?
Right. So the role of Ludi is to just say that this is ready for advancing to City Council for a decision.
Kurt, the comments we made on the plan, will we get responses from them?
Yes, I think we can send you those. They're in a spreadsheet right now. We're having some trouble making those legible on our website. It's really just a website issue that's causing that delay. But I think Scott chime in. I think they're close to resolving that, and we can get those posted relatively soon. Can you jump in?
Yeah, we expect to have those posted next week, hopefully early next week, so everybody can see all of the comments that were made and our response to each of the, as Kurt said, nearly 2,500 comments we got on the first draft of the plan.
And I think on the website now is there's some responses to the more substantive ones, but it's a subset of those, and we have the full documented spreadsheet awaiting.
Okay, so you won't be sending it back to the people that made the comments, that'll just be posted on the website.
Yes.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Will what Cheney presented to us, will that be incorporated into the draft?
It is. So both of those models that Cheney presented are in the draft plan.
Well, I would say she showed us four or five different visual 3D models, but they're still very valuable.
What we could do, Buzz, is we could show you the views that are in the draft plan, and if there's some different views that you think would be helpful that you saw tonight that are not in the plan, we can add those. So we'll follow up with you on that.
Well, just on the surface, I think everybody would be in agreement with this. Everything that she showed us, I think should be diced into the draft. Then they can see what the difference between the 5-story, 8-story, 12-story, 20-story. I just thought that was great what she had, and I think that council would be going into this with their eyes wide open if we got all those into the draft. I think right now you've got limited to about two of them into the draft. I think she showed us about five.
Okay, we'll double check that.
Can you tell me, so what Cheney showed us, that will be the design guidelines that will be worked on for the future?
No, the models are purely illustrative for, you know, testing different lots, and they were kind of used to inform to our general plan recommendations. But any changes to design standards and guidelines would have an additional process of analysis.
My understanding, this is Jesse, my understanding is those were massing models to help us see what that means. Correct?
That's right. Yeah, but
they're just massing models. So,
but she was talking about changing setbacks in certain areas, but we're not specifically talking about that in the plan, are we?
So I could point you to the recommendation, Miles, that recommends looking at some of the concepts that she illustrated. One is that side street setback, making the side street setback more consistent with those adjacent residential properties. So that's what that concept illustrates. But again, it doesn't get into the specific feet of that setback. That's done in a regulatory process with additional analysis. And the same with the upper story height setbacks. That model shows the concept of how that looks, but the specific feet happens during the regulatory process.
Right.
So we're approving the idea.
Right. Yeah. So the plan language guidance says increase those setbacks to improve the transition between taller buildings and adjacent residences. But the specific details still need to be figured out. Okay, Frank, is there anything you want to say in conclusion, or Councilman Hines, if he's still on the call?
I'm not.
Councilman Hines is not on the call, as you just specified.
Left the building.
Oh, all right.
Appreciative of, our first meeting was July of 2017, and this is June of 2020, so this is the 36th month that that we've all been at this. So amazing progress in the midst of everything. Thanks to everybody, whether you're on the steering committee or not, and with all the comments, and we will reconvene again on August 20th, unless the doodle poll tells us something different. Thank you, Kurt, Scott, the team, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I would just echo that. I think that there has been some contention in the past, but this meeting seems to suggest that. That the hard work of this committee and Kurt and Scott have kind of ironed out a lot of that, and I think that that's really positive. That it takes a lot of effort to put together something this big and complex, and I think it takes a lot of work to create something that's this big. That, at least in this meeting, doesn't really seem to have major sticking points anymore, or any sticking points. I think that based on the conversation we had today, it was just kind of suggestions on how to make the document even better. Not this is a horrible document, we need to throw it out, or I'm gonna move out of the city if this is adopted, or whatever. So I think that that's a good testament to the folks on the call, the folks for the whatever WebEx meeting, and the folks who have invested these 3 years into this effort, and certainly to the CBD staff that have been taking a lot of beating over the last 3 years on this and many other issues. I've been in some of the meetings with you, and I know that some of them are pretty good. So thank you for all you do.
I would just like a quick follow-up, Councilman, that I was told some wording had been changed on the missing middle, and I was just told basically to read the plan to figure out what the changes were. We didn't discuss them. So I can't say there aren't points of contention because we didn't discuss it. So I'll have to review it and deal with CPD with those issues.
Yeah, and thanks for that, Miles. And again, I want to emphasize this thing at the bottom on the slide that you're looking at to make sure that everyone, including Miles, but everyone, that's a good reminder to make sure that you review the draft and look at those details and be prepared to bring those to the steering committee so we can discuss them. Because at the steering committee, we're kind of summarizing what changes were made, But unless there's some specifics that are brought, we're relying on the committee members to provide that feedback. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night. Thanks, everyone.